At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
fair. And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
Hello, everyone. We're Superhero Stuff You Should Know. And if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right. So come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you come in. I'm Shane O'Hare of the Geekscape Games Podcast, the number one video game podcast on the Geekscape.network. Join myself, Derek Krennevelt, and a guest every fortnight as we discuss video game news, video game reviews, and dissections. That's Geekscape Games every 2 weeks on Geekscape.net.
Matt, we are talking about slime creatures from outer space, and I think it's only appropriate that you introduce this week's guest, since I've just met him about a minute ago.
I am happy to introduce this week's guest, although I was sort of excited to hear you try to pronounce his last name.
Ooh, no, we're not going to play that game.
All right, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
I'm still the guy who says Mr. Pompeii, you know?
Mr. Pompeii instead of... this is my good friend, John Leshefsky.
Hello, it's about, John.
It's about 90% correct. Vleshefsky.
Vleshefsky?
Put a V at the top. V, as in Wilhelm Wundt or whatever.
See, that this is how hard it is, Matt. I've known John for... How long have I known you now? Over 10 years.
Since 2011, since Papacitos.
Since Papacitos, since we used to hang out at a Mexican restaurant in Greenpoint. And then John is the singer and songwriter of a band called Late Cambrian. I'm doing your intro for you, John. I hope that's okay.
It's great.
Who toured with Wheatus in, that would have been 2014. 14, thank you. But we've been friends since before that and still are to this day.
Yeah, and we have another project called Fashion Bird Danger Danger that me and Matt are the main songwriters on, where we, during the pandemic, we were sending each other samples and weird sounds back and forth, and we created like 3 records in like a year.
Yeah, that is highly worth checking. I mean, for Al P, there's, I wouldn't say it's like Weird Al's music, what we do, but if you are a fan of the strange and absurd, which I'm assuming a lot of people who listen to this show are, you would probably find some very interesting things in there. I would recommend, and not just because I'm in it.
Yeah. Well, I will definitely have to check it out. So while we're talking about weird and absurd, slime creatures from outer space. Again, this is one of those originals where there's not a ton of information out there. I do want to know why John picked it, first and foremost. But real quick, the one sentence description that we got of this song on Wikipedia just said, slime creatures from outer space features prominent usage of a theremin, courtesy of Steve J, in order to emulate the sounds of a cheesy 50s sci-fi soundtrack. That's all
no,
that
I didn't
they really
see that.
Had to say about this.
Courtesy of Steve J, he was just the one in the band who had a theremin just kicking around.
Just laying around. So this
impressive.
Is technically a style parody of a artist slash song, and we'll get into it. But first, I want to know why John picked kind of a deep cut on the Dare to be Stupid record here with Slime Creatures.
I think that's one of the reasons I picked it, because I know like the popular songs from Dare to be Stupid, but I never, at the time, I never listened to like a full Weird Al record. So I was like, let me just kind of flip through this record and see what I'm missing. And then this song immediately appealed to me. And then I read about it, and it's like, I can't believe that the drums and the bass are like real. Those are like real
it
players.
It does sound programmed. It really so does sound like it's funny. Programmed and
yeah.
fake. Yeah.
And I really like the movie Mars Attacks. And I like stuff that's kind of kitschy and kind of, it reminds me of a store that used to be in New York City called Love Saves the Day. That was over by St. Mark's, where you would go in and it was all like all this old stuff and artifacts and like Last Supper dinner trays and like cool stuff from the 50s. And I was like, I like things that sound like kind of a corny version of something.
I love that you, yeah, I'm sorry. I love that you mentioned Mars Attacks, because that, I thought the same thing listening to this song again today.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. This song predates Mars Attacks by 10 years ish.
Predates the movie, but not the trading cards, though. The trading cards existed
right.
back in the 50s.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I apologize.
Oh, yeah. And Love Saves the Day had like a Mars Attacks mask and like Mars Attacks trading cards added.
That's right.
Yeah. So my thought, which is weird, admittedly, was that I wrote down, I almost wish that this song didn't get released for like another 2 or 3 years. Hmm. And they could have reworked it to be one of the theme songs for Killer Clowns from Outer Space, because like, it's got a little bit of that, like Killer Clowns is such a great example of what the song is trying to be, which is like an 80s throwback to a 50s like style, essentially.
Yes. Yes.
So I saw that this said that the song is a style parody of Thomas Dolby, specifically the song Hyperactive.
Hyperactive.
I listened to it 5 minutes ago.
There you go. Oh, good call.
It's got the melody line, but nothing else.
Well, like, well, it's so the melody line is sort of there. You can hear yeah. some of the vocal. And also, it's like, I think in Thomas Dolby's track, the chorus melody, Al uses as the verse melody here. The ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Like, it's very similar to that. Al's verse is closer to the hook of Hyperactive.
I would say the bass sound, too.
The bass sound is there. I was going to say, so this is an interesting one, because I think this is the first... We talked about, on the first record, Al doing a style parody of Tony O'Kay, who is a very obscure artist to do a style reference to. This is also a strong contender. Thomas Dolby had one song that was something of a hit, and it is called She Blinded Me With Science.
Love it.
And that is one of those, I think if you're listening to this and you don't know that song, look it up. You might recognize it. It is a incredibly, it's a weirder song than this, I think.
Oh, 100%.
She Blinded Me With Science is bizarre. And if it's known for anything at this point, it's that there's a refrain that some other character, not Thomas Dolby, throughout the song just keeps yelling, "With science!" Like, just in the background. Yeah.
But here's the thing. Thomas Dolby, yet to do an episode on him for One Hit Thunder. We will eventually.
Mm. Yeah, he's a great candidate.
Well, because if you know the career of that man after She Blinded Me With Science, he may be the most financially successful one-hit wonder in the history of music.
Interesting.
Think of his last name.
Well, I was going to say, is Dolby, is yes. he related? Because I didn't know. He's related to the Dolby surround sound. Like, that's him?
He created the surround sound.
I didn't know that.
He created the ringtone. He wrote the theme song for TED Talk. Like, his career is un-fucking believable. What he has, like, done after that stupid little song.
Yeah. Well, and this song came from the record after. This is following that hit.
Yeah.
And this was like a minor hit, not nearly as successful as She Blinded Me With Science. But to me, when I hear Al's version, Al's song, Slime Creatures from Outer Space, and Hyperactive side by side, I hear a lot of common ground in terms of they both have this very sort of frantic, high energy thing, almost like sort of like coming apart at the seams while also still being very, very precisely done. All the weird vocoder effects, the space stuff, like Hyperactive doesn't have all of it, but it has a lot of it. And the thing I'm the most excited about with this is it's a great example of something that I know Al loves, but I think is the first time we've really seen before, which is, at least on this show, his affection for people who make goofy music that is technically extremely challenging.
Yeah, I don't think that this is a particularly funny song. It's just a very impressive song.
Yeah.
Like, one of the only notes I wrote down was like, dear God, this bass line slaps. Like, quite literally.
It literally slaps, and it goes the whole time. It's nonstop. It's very, very high energy. Yeah, no, this is a really, like, this is a tough, hear it very clearly. It's a tough piece of music.
As a guitar player, I was also impressed by the guitar. It's like a precursor to ska in that it's like, he's playing on all the up notes. It's like, up, like this. It's very,
and
steady.
That solo in the middle, too, is super. It's amazing. That's out there. That is an out there guitar solo.
I love that you called out ska music, John, because I sent this to a past guest and kind of the mutual friend that connected Matthew and I in the first place, Chris Fafalios, because that man loves a bass line. And I was like, dude, you got to listen to the bass in this song. And he wrote back and said, this reminds me a lot of Fishbone. And I can absolutely understand why he says that.
I can totally hear that,
Like, it's got that. This song really represents where, like, I feel like new wave... It's such a big banner of music in the 80s.
Like, it sounds like Thomas Dolby's kind of like the Tesla of music.
He really is. Yeah. He's out there. But New Wave, what I was going to say is like New Wave fell into this giant banner where it was like, on one end it was like, oh, this is what we call like, what would now be called like pop punk. I feel like there was a lot of that, like CBGB's bands that just kind of like popped up their sound a little bit. Then there's like the bands that had synthesizers, but like the new wave that I love is the stuff that you and I have talked about with Devo and Thomas Dolby falls into this where it's like really pushing the limitations on what can you do with a keyboard as an instrument and like really messing with those sounds. And this song is so freaking good. Like the vocal effects, the instrumentation on it, like this isn't, I don't think this is ever going to be someone's like, oh, I love Slime Creatures from Outer Space. It makes me laugh. It's so funny. But it's like, this is one of those, I feel like every one of his albums, he has at least one track that's about showing off how talented his band actually is.
Yeah,
and
exactly
this is that track.
And, I think that's, and that it's, it's a reference, which I was dancing around it earlier. It's a reference to, I love that he's paying homage to something that he clearly cares about. This is not something done because this is like a great marketing tool or this is like we got to cash in on this trend, right? Like this is clearly just important to him. There's no good reason to do this other than that Al must have been like, he must have heard Hyperactive and been like, wow, that's awesome, I want to do something like that.
Yeah,
and I love that. I mean, just as like a fan, I think that's some great insight into, you know, what makes him tick.
Yeah, because
as an artist himself,
the song itself isn't funny, but I think the reason why I didn't choose one of the straight parodies is because like I think I would run out of things to talk about after after you get past like the whole like kind of playing with words part of it. So this one just feels like he immersed himself in a genre, in like a weird kind of B-52 slash Mars Attacks kind of genre.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
This is really, we always talk about how like there are the style parodies and then there's the songs where it's like, I think this is just if Weird Al never hit as a parody artist and just was a guy who wrote his own sound of music.
Yeah.
I think we would have gotten an album of stuff that sounded like this. Like, I think that's where his like real creative itch is getting scratched, is doing a song like this.
Yes. I mean, and just to go back one time, because I do think we should give the lyrics some credit, because this is not super funny, but I do love the idea that like really the joke of this song is that these monsters, these alien creatures are destroying the planet, and seemingly Al's only reaction is like mild annoyance.
Yes.
Like that's the joke of the song.
Yeah, he's not upset about the world ending.
He's not nearly as upset as he probably should be. You know, I wrote down they'll rip your head off just for fun. They'll paralyze your mind. They're wearing out their welcome. Which is... Yeah, a real this is a song of many understatements.
It kind of feels like there's three different types of aliens. I was looking at the lyrics, and there's the lizard people in the third verse, but then there's the ones who have the really big head in another verse.
Oh yeah, you're right.
And then there's one, the flying saucers. Now the aliens are on the loose. Like the very first set of aliens, kind of feels like a little bit more like This Island Earth or. or maybe War of the Worlds. But then when you get to the lizard people at the bottom, that's a different set of aliens to me.
You might be right. You know, they even make a note in the lyrics that they are that they're reproducing in the sewers.
Yeah, that's a different alien.
I was gonna say, yeah, maybe there's like different aliens here. Maybe we're already like, who knows how long this invasion has been going on in this song. Like, are we creating like hybrid, two alien species are now forming this like collective genetic mutation, crossbreeding?
Yeah, there's a bunch of chuds in the sewers of
exactly.
New York suddenly.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like this song, even though this song is 10 years before this video game existed, this song almost feels like it could be part of the soundtrack to Zombies Ate My Neighbors, if you remember that, like,
that
Super Nintendo Sega Genesis. Yeah.
I love that game.
That game has that concept where it's like, all right, level one, you're fighting zombies. Level two, you're fighting zombies, and there's, like, a weird weed that's growing in the grass. And then by the time you get to, like, just even level 10, you've got aliens, werewolves, there's a chainsaw.
Tremors. There's like a Tremors.
Yeah, like
one
Tremors.
With,
like,
yeah, it's a giant worm that shows up and you
yeah,
kinda,
like it's
kind of got stuck.
It's
there.
Everything. Yeah. And that's kind of the vibe I get from this, though, is that it's like it
makes
started
sense.
With the aliens and then it just kept growing to more and more stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, this is, I mean, by the end of this song, the situation seems pretty grim.
Yeah, they'll suck your brain out through a straw. Reminded me of Starship Troopers, actually. Just
that,
yes.
That is very Starship Troopers. Yeah. You just can't trust those guys. Again, just the back and forth.
Yeah,
that's like you
I
ran
do,
out through a straw. You just can't trust those guys.
I do like that he's talking about them. He's accepted all the things they do.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, you can't trust those guys. Like, that's just who
and
they are.
I guess that's the part of it that I like, is it's, it feels like the aliens invaded, in the context of this song, is like, oh, they invaded like 50 years ago. And it's just something we all have to live with now. And it's like, I know, it sucks. Like, we got to be careful. Like, don't trust those guys because they will suck out your brain with a straw.
Yeah, no,
so
you're
just
right.
Heads up.
It's the matter of factness, and like you said, the mild annoyance. Like,
yeah.
We talked about how he mentioned that they're covered in fungus, but the whole thing is they got their hands covered with fungus. They've got eyes like some kind of bug, and I hope that they don't come in here because I just shampooed the rug.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's just like the frustration of like they're gonna get mud all over this carpet when these fungus creatures come in.
Yeah.
It's ahead of its time, because the whole concept of accepting aliens as they are is like a Men in Black thing and then like a Rick and Morty thing. Where
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Like, you just have to deal, you know, like they're not something that we're like looking at and like running away from. They're just more like, ugh, these guys are always late and it's always a mess when they, you know, like I've been waiting for this guy for like 10 years and he never showed
yeah.
up.
No, it's so true. I agree. I think it's definitely ahead of its, I mean, it makes sense because he is, a lot of those things also draw similar references to this like early like 50s sci-fi, which is inherently, I mean, it's very charming and it's super fun and clearly Al's a huge fan of it, but it's also one of those things that's like the more you think about it or look into it, the more you're like, this doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Like he's poking fun at it while also enjoying like that very, very throwback, the early days of sci-fi, which I think a lot of these things that we're talking about have repurposed in like a, you know, a newly comedic way in recent years.
It's
yeah,
true.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, I after hearing this song and then finding out about Hyperactive, I was like, okay, so Hyperactive came out in 1984. This came out in 1985. I was like, I felt like this isn't the type of song that would necessarily influence anyone else, but I did find one song that it reminds me of, and
ooh,
it's the Violet Beauregard song from the Danny Elfman new Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The listen count and listen hard as James and Violet Beauregard, and the sound of the voice is also it's also kind of going through a vocoder and has like a weird kind of harmony under it.
Yeah,
and chewing, chewing, chewing. I was like, this is. Danny Elfman is the type of person who kind of is in the same
very much so.
Kind of
very
vibe.
Much so. Absolutely.
Oingo Boingo,
we're talking about
Thomas
new
Dolby.
Wave bands of this time period.
Yeah.
Oingo
yeah.
Boingo is right there.
I was
going to
say, I would not
doubt.
Be shocked if Oingo Boingo and Thomas Dolby played shows together circa 1983, 1984.
That's a really impressive pull, John. I would, as soon as you started singing that, I remembered it, but wow, I have not, that's not something I have revisited in a long time.
It's not, it's not Tim Burton's best.
No.
But the songs were pretty good. Like,
I actually do remember that now as well. I thought a lot of the music for that one was quite good.
Yeah, no, I don't hate Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I just remember that being the start of what I would say was the steady downfall of my enjoyment of Tim Burton movies.
It's part of the slide. It's part of the
yes. It was part of a slide. It was a pretty bold movie to try to remake. I mean, it was not going to, even if it was amazing, I feel like people would have been pretty negative about it. I mean, we're really on a wonderful tangent here, and I'm on board for it, and I'm going to just extend it further. Because this is a quote that I heard from M. Night Shyamalan, another great example of this.
Oh, yes.
And by his own admission, he was on the Netflix Norm Macdonald talk show series, where if you haven't seen it, I'm a huge fan of Norm Macdonald. I would recommend it highly. Yeah, it's an interview
show.
We're
actually recording this the 1 year anniversary of Norm's passing. Which
are we
is
really? Oh my God. There
fact.
You go. Look at that. It was meant to be. But he had M. Night Shyamalan on, and M. Night talking very candidly about his career and the highs and then how far he fell. And he described a process that he came to realize where he said, when you're young and you're trying to make it, he was talking about it through the lens of the balance of instinct and craft. So when you're young and you're just getting started, you have all of this instinct and all these ideas, but you don't have the craft. You don't know how to actually make something. You have to figure that out as you go. But that instinct is the thing that people are drawn to in the thing that you're making. That's the part that people freak out about, is those ideas, the nuggets of ideas, and like the just seeing the inner workings of your brain. Then as you make movies and you continue making them, your craft goes way up, which means you don't need instinct in the same way anymore. And you lose some of that instinct because you can cover it up with craft.
Yeah.
Just an ability to, you know how to do it. And this applies to so many things. I thought of it in music immediately. This is absolutely true. And he was talking about how when he made The Visit, which was kind of his like return to form horror movie after many, many years, he basically, at everybody in the cast he possibly could, he only hired people who that was their first movie. He did not want anyone who had worked on a set before. He wanted all brand new people, and to try to get some of that.
Well, that certainly comes across.
Yes, exactly. And to try to get some of that vibe across of the idea, his young mentality of like, if this doesn't work, I'm screwed. He paid for the entire thing himself, and like had to put a mortgage on his house again in order to pay for it. He was just like, I need to set this up that if I mess up this movie, it is an absolute disaster. For like, it will ruin my life if this isn't good.
Yeah,
that's really
I think that applies to so many people. I think about it all the time. I love that concept. Ever since I saw that, I think about it.
I think he has more bad movies than good movies at this point, though.
100%. But I
M. Night.
Yeah,
probably.
I mean,
I'm probably more forgiving of him than a lot of people, because
you can find a way to like The Happening because its badness like wraps around bad back to good and then back to bad again.
We can't even begin. So, we have to dedicate an entirely different podcast to just talking about The Happening.
But I want to talk about I want to jump on something that you said as a beautiful tangent. I think that concept of instinct and craft, if we're going to apply that to music, I think Al is a prime example of someone who's been able to perfectly keep those two things in harmony for about 40 years.
He has really tried. And I think he sets himself up in a great way where because of the nature of what he does allows him to push himself. And we'll bring it right back to Slime Creatures, push himself to places that are not necessarily musically comfortable. I don't think this doesn't sound to me like the sort of thing there's nothing in Al's catalog up until this point that sounds even remotely close to this song. So I think he can find something that's interesting to him and he can channel it openly in a way that a lot of creators don't get to do and like really wear the influence on his sleeve, but also at the same time, like take a big swing and a chance at something that's out of his comfort zone, which does keep you on your toes in a way that, you don't have to do if you're, Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Or someone as lazy as Tim Burton. That's right. I called him lazy.
I think he's so talented that his kind of vaguely sophomoric and puerile side actually balances what could become really kind of maybe flat, overly perfect music. Like Slime Creatures is like perfectly performed. So the lyrics need to kind of be like kind of like an eighth grader telling a story he made up after watching like Saturday morning TV. In order to make it not be like, oh, okay, and it also thinks it has something to say, all right.
Yeah.
You know, like it's it kind of like helps helps it make more sense to me, you know?
It makes more sense. It just makes the whole thing a little bit more palatable. And back to the other thing, it reminds me of all of these acts who I love so much, the references are there. Al clearly does as well. People like Frank Zappa or They Might Be Giants or Ween or even Devo.
I was going to bring up Ween, actually.
Yeah. Bands that are not afraid to have a sense of humor in their music because the music itself immediately confirms that they're not, the music is dead serious.
Yeah.
The words can be funny and can be light, but the music itself is never a joke.
I was just going to say, it is really interesting how many of like some of the bands that you would consider like among the most musically proficient bands in existence have the most absolutely absurd lyrics and like the stuff that jumps to my mind is like all of the prog stuff, right? Like sit down and really read like some lyrics to Tool, Rush, or Primus songs and you're like, what are they even talking about? Like Rush were like 8 songs about like D&D and Lord of the Rings characters. Like
Primus
is just all over the place with their like fairy, like you said, fairy tale almost, like a kid making up a story. I feel like that describes most of Primus's lyrics. Is just
it
like
does very much have
stream
that vibe
of conscience. And then even Tool, like Tool will have these really heady songs and then the most absurd fucking song you've ever heard in your entire life, like right after it.
Like Hooker with a Penis, that song?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I really appreciate Tool. Like they were, I think Enema and Lateralist were 2 of my favorite records, but I feel like lyrically after that, I was kind of like hoping for something else. And I feel like on the new album, Maynard is still in the same place he was at in 1996. So I'm just like, I don't know, man. Like, just, I get it. I get it. You're spiritually enlightened now and you did a lot of.
Yeah. And it's a testament that it feels oddly alienating in a way that the stuff that's a little bit more goofy and just fun doesn't
feel
like
that. There needs to be a little. I guess that's what I meant about this song. Absolutely.
The
goofiness of it keeps you from focusing on the musicianship, and that's a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
You listen to those early Tool albums and it's not shocking to realize that Tool was born out of green jelly, but you wouldn't get that from the later stuff.
What?
Whatsoever.
No, how?
Oh, did you not know that?
No.
The original drummer of Tool started by drumming in green jelly, and Maynard was a vocalist in green jelly. He's the person who does the Not by the Hair of My Chinny Chin Chin in Three Little Pigs, and that's how they first met each other to go and form their own side band.
Holy shit.
Isn't that insane?
I don't know why I thought that someone... I heard the story that someone heard him screaming at someone at a bar and thought he should be a singer for their band.
I'm sure that there was an element of that,
too. Maybe there's a crossover there. Maybe that was the guy from Green Jelly who heard him and was like,
that's
can you
what
come
I'm saying.
Sing
okay,
on this?
So,
that probably is what happened, yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that's okay. That's really funny.
It's possible that both of those things happen. It's possible he might have done the green jelly thing, and then, more bar yelling led to the formation of other people joining Tool. I don't know. Who knows? The moral of the story is everyone should yell more in bars.
Yes. At all times, really, put down your...
Be yelling. Always be yelling.
Yell at your bartenders, yell at your waiters, waitresses. It could lead you to being a superstar.
And write increasingly mediocre poetry.
Yeah. If you can yell at a bar... and not lose your voice, then you've got something special. Because for me, bar talk is exactly where I lose my voice.
It's the same way.
It's a little bit elevated, but it's not to the point where it's in that mixed voice where you can healthily do it.
Totally.
You know, so it's always, I always end up being like, I can't talk right now. We got to go outside. Like, I can't do this.
Yep. Agreed.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, pooping uniform. This is not
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why did my face seem Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
Hello, everyone. We're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right, so come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made.
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscover Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
All right, well, let's do some ranking, and then I am to understand that John has a surprise for us.
Yes, we do have a surprise, but yes, we got to rank this this song. I actually, right now, have no clue where I'm putting this.
Okay, so I'm looking at my list. Oh, maybe I'm going to put this higher than I don't know. So I can tell you where I'm looking right now, which is still okay. Like on the higher end of my list. So right now I'm eyeballing like that Checks in the Mail, Midnight Star, Bistopopil range. Part of me wanted to put it underneath Midnight Star, but then a part of me also wants to put it above Checks in the Mail.
See,
so I think I'm going to find the happy medium. I'm going to put
tough,
it
right.
I'm going to put it between Checks in the Mail and Midnight Star.
Okay, well, thank you for that amount of stalling that I needed to make my decision. I'm going to put this in between One More Minute and Buy Me a Condo.
Okay, a little bit lower than I ranked.
A little bit lower, but I am definitely still. I'm a big, big fan of this song. And I would definitely encourage people, if you didn't already gather it, like listen to the Thomas Dolby track if you haven't, because I think it's super cool. And that entire record, which I believe is called Aliens Ate My Buick, funny enough, another tie-in to this song. I don't know if that was a coincidence.
Whoa,
or not.
That's crazy.
Aliens Ate My Buick is worth your time. If you like the vibe of this song, really, that is basically what he does. And you'll probably find a lot to like on that record.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Now, John, you actually get to do some ranking of your own.
Oh, no.
I'm not sure how familiar you are with Al's entire catalog.
Okay.
But we let every guest, we have a guest rankings list where you can put Slime Creatures from Outer Space wherever you want on the guest rankings.
Is King of Sway King of Pain?
Yes, it is.
Okay, then put it below that.
Okay.
There you go.
There we go.
I
all
love
right.
that, John. That was the most, I feel like that was the most sincere, honest attempt at ranking that we've had from any of our guests so far.
Anybody.
Like I said, most people are like, put it at number one, my pick.
I mean, that makes sense, too, that this could be number one.
No, but
one,
you know,
but it could also be number, what is that now? Number seven?
That's seven. Seven out of eight seven. Now.
Yeah. It's yeah. Seven out of eight because those other ones are pretty good.
They are, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So give me a lead into what this link is that I'm about to open.
Okay, so before you watch it, a couple of years ago, I was working on, if you've heard of the artist Tracy Bonham, she had an album called The Burdens of Being Upright. So that came out in 1996. 20 years later, so it was 2016, I was working on a 20th anniversary redo where we re-record the whole thing. And we did a Pledge Music and got a bunch of friends involved. And so we got Fred Armisen to do like a little skit where he's like auditioning Tracy to sing her own material. And then she was able to get Weird Al to send a video in where he's pretending to audition for the band.
Okay.
And this is it. Okay. It's short, but it was like very... I'll talk about it after you watch it.
Hey, Tracy, it's Al. I just wanted to send you my audition tape for your band. I hope I make the cut. And by the way, I really think you should be the singer. Okay, here you go.
Dude, the fact that he can even make that little accordion app sound as good as it did is insane.
I need to find,
it's
is that still
iPad.
In the App Store? I
it's,
need that in my yeah. life. For the people, like, you can't, obviously, this is only an audio podcast. So he, after he says his audition, it's him sitting in a chair playing an accordion iPad app, where with both of his hands, he's hitting the keys and the buttons. And it sounds really good. I mean, it sounds like a little bit sort of like digital hokey thing, but that's like, he's really playing that in the video. It's awesome.
It literally sounds like the music that plays when you're on like a merry-go-round.
Yes. Like, yes, exactly.
It's perfect.
Exactly.
That's amazing. All right. So did you get to film that? Did you get to meet him or did he just submit that?
He submitted that. He sent it to us. But I've just had it sitting on my hard drive for 4 years waiting for this moment.
It was so funny because I invited John to do this before and he picked this song. And then only a couple days ago, John was like, I think Weird Al sent me a video once. I was like, what? You have to find this right now. What are you talking about?
I honestly didn't know if I could. I honestly didn't know I was going to I didn't think I was going to have it actually because it was like, there's another hard drive that has all that stuff on it. But it turns out it was so awesome. I think I just like copied it into all my hard drives.
I'm so glad you were able to find that for us. Thank you for sharing that.
And the other thing you guys missed out on because you don't have the video quality is that the first half of the video, he is in what looks like just a pitch black room, but he's got a tiny little like lighter that you would use to like light a stove or something.
Yeah, or a barbecue grill.
Your barbecue grill just to illuminate just enough of his face that you can see that it's actually Weird Al in this shot. I love that our guests are coming with the deep cut finds of their life. John, if people were listening to this episode and they just absolutely loved your personality and your insight, where can they go to hear more of your stuff and to check out Fashion Danger Bird?
First of all, we should have named the band that. It's Fashion Bird Danger Danger.
Fashion Bird Danger Danger.
Damn it. It sounds like a Google Translate of like the Japanese.
That was that was great.
I love it.
Sorry to improve your band's name, but yes.
Yeah, how dare you do that without clearing it in the pre-show?
Well, I should talk about the music stuff. So late Cambrian, like the time period, you can find us on Spotify, and if you're younger, Apple Music, and if you care about quality title and all that kind of stuff. Fashion Bird Danger Danger, same thing. But go to Instagram/late Cambrian because I talk about both bands there, and you'll see Matt too because Matt and I do a lot of stuff together.
I'm around.
Yeah, he's around.
Yeah.
And we have a show coming up November 12th at Rockwood Music Hall Stage 1, and it's free, 8 p.m.
Which is next week at the time you're listening to this podcast, fine people. Next week, it's free at Rockwood.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be there playing bass. I don't think I said that yet. I've been playing bass in Lake Cambrian recently with John, and it has been a lot of fun. So if by chance you're listening to this and you're in the New York area, you got to come out and check out the show and hang with us.
Matt is amazing. Like after our other show, our first show with Matt, like people were talking about the bass too. They were like, this bass player is just going for it. He's amazing.
Oh, that's nice.
You know
I
what?
Have fun. The music's fun. I enjoy.
To shower a little bit more bass appreciation on Matt before we totally wrap up this episode,
Do
have to ask, we talked a lot about the bass in this song.
Yes.
Since you played every single Weird Al song on a live stream.
Yes.
Where would you rank this as far as songs that were extremely difficult to learn on the bass for that live stream?
This took me a good long time to get really comfortable. I'm not much of a slap bass player in general. Like, that's not my strong suit. And this is a very, like, technical. Like, it's basically the same riff over and over again. It does a couple little changes and switches the root note a few times. But getting this right took a while. I would say it wasn't the hardest. Not the hardest one in the set, but definitely in the top 10% in terms of challenging. Yeah, this took a while to get right. To be honest, I probably couldn't do it for you right now if I tried, because I think I crammed to get this right and then promptly forgot because of how taxing it was.
Honestly, the way it sounds is what the reason why I thought it was like a keyboard. It doesn't have those. When you're slapping, typically you use like other strings as part of the rhythm to kind of get to the notes. And they're all separate on this. So you have to kind of be like slap, 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 slap. So it's like very strange that
it's very strange
using the board to do it. Yeah.
Considering it's a slap part, it's very precise.
Which I think
you don't always get that often. Yeah, I can't play it as well as Steve J plays it on this recording. He is laying it down.
He's playing that slap bass, and then he's also manning the theremins.
He's also manning the theremins. He's got a whole garage full of theremins.
I thought Weird Al played the theremin on this. Maybe he borrowed
No, Steve J did on this one. He played
Did they say, did Al play it, but it belonged to Steve?
That's what I thought.
I'm pulling this information from Wikipedia, which is not what I would say is the strongest source
on the internet. I would just be curious to know, because theremin is interesting, especially if you're making wacky sounds with it. It's the sort of thing that anyone can make a sound with. To play it well is almost impossible. But if you're just trying to make a sci-fi sound effect, like definitely, even if Al had never played it before, he could have done it.
So this is the way it's worded. It features prominent usage of a theremin courtesy of Steve J.
Okay.
That could mean anything.
That definitely could mean either way.
Wait, you know what? There's one other place I can check. Hold on a second.
All right.
Personnel.
This is. I'm glad we're ending the podcast by unraveling this mystery.
According to the liner notes of the album, Weird Al is credited for playing the theremin.
Okay,
so
there you go.
I guess DJ provided it, and then Al then played it. I always wanted the theremin for some reason. I could barely play any other instrument, but I thought it'd be so cool to be in a band that I could play a theremin for.
I'm just now envisioning the great conversation of Steve J showing up with his theremin, but holding it back and being like, now, Al, do you promise you're going to take good care of this? This is very expensive. I had it shipped from Japan. You can't get too weird with this.
Yeah. He's like, don't worry. We'll put a courtesy of Steve J in the credits so that everyone knows that it was yours.
Theremin on loan from Steve J. I want it in the liner notes.
Yeah, right, theremin played by Al, but provided by Steve J.
Exactly.
It's just very strange. Really,
that's an important distinction to make.
Yeah. Just want you to know that theremin was mine.
Please make sure everyone knows that that's mine. And it's available for rent, but not for free.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, pooping uniform. This is not.
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
Hello, everyone. We're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right, so come on down to... why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.